Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 16 of Game On with Cody and John. This episode's big deal, the Collector's Edition.
We'll discuss tips and tricks for building your game collection.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Deadlands Reloaded.
We'll get back in the saddle with this classic and see if it stands the test of time.
Yeehaw! All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're coming to you live from Indianapolis, Indiana.
The original and the best Game On.
That's right, the only Game On you need for
exactly.
All your Game On needs.
Exactly.
So we just finished up a great convention of a couple weeks ago, Hoosier Con. Hope you enjoyed episode 15 of our show where we talked about that great little convention.
I had fun.
I had a great time, yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about what games we played in the Game On inbox, but other exciting things going on right now. We've got the NCAA basketball tournament.
Yeah, normally a good time of year for me, but bracket not doing great.
My
final fours, they're all still alive, but my first and second rounds were pretty messy.
Who's your pick to win it all?
The Memphis Tigers.
Memphis, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Sexy pick.
I've selected the University of Connecticut to win the whole thing.
Not
so
great.
They've been looking strong. So.
Yeah, well, they played like Chattanooga the first round.
They looked strong against Chattanooga.
Yeah, yeah. I'd look strong against a preschool team, I'm just saying.
I'm trying to get fired up about this, but I absolutely hate basketball. I just can't get into it. So.
And I'm usually fired up about it, but it's pretty chalk this year. I mean, it's just all the higher seeded teams are advancing, so it's just kind of.
We got like what Western Kentucky got a.
And I picked them to go to the Sweet 16. They almost did it.
We're obviously much
thanks
better.
Hilltoppers.
We're obviously much better at games than we are at picking bracket stuff. Well,
one of us is.
I've definitely lost my $10 in the office pool.
Wow, mine was only $5. So sorry about you.
Big spenders, yeah. Well, we got a lot of great stuff coming up in this episode of Game On. We've got, of course, the Game On inbox. And in our Buy, Try, or Deny segment, we're going to be talking about Deadlands Reloaded, our very first...
Finally.
Our very first role-playing game review. And so we're real excited about that. We've even got a little segment where we record it after our playtest.
The dinner table, maybe?
Yeah, John's dining room table.
Exactly. And we've got a great big deal talking about gaming collection.
That's right, yeah. Whether you have a small or big game collection, there's lots of different ways that you can sort of build your own library. And we've got some little tips and tricks, and I would say even maybe some philosophical discussion about how to build a good gaming library. So we'll be talking about that too.
But as John said, it all starts with the Game On inbox, and we'll start that right
now. It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find. Well, welcome once again to the Game On inbox. We've opened up the inbox to bring you the best in gaming news and information. And we're going to start off with games that we've played. And, of course, where have we been playing games lately?
Who is your con?
Who is your con 2009?
That's right.
So, Cody, why don't you tell us about some of the stuff that you played? And, of course, we played a lot of stuff together. So.
Sure. I ran the ex-president's game. That was the only game that I really ran.
That was a fantastic game.
Well, thank you. I thought it went well. I never really got a chance to play test it because I kind of procrastinated finishing it up until I think it was final maybe 2 days before it was actually all finished up. But there were a few maybe balance issues with the characters, but everyone we had there was really getting into it, and it makes
it great.
It makes it fun to GM because the people are having fun and they're getting into character. The worst thing you can have is 8 people that are just sitting there like, I attack Al Gore. It's like, you don't just attack Al Gore. You attack Al Gore, you know?
Well, and I'll just go ahead and brag on Cody a little bit here about the quality of the game, because this game used the Savage Worlds dice system or role-playing system, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later when we talk about Deadlands Reloaded. But he created this entire setting and all of the characters and all of the weapons and everything, and it was just a really well done story.
Well, I appreciate it.
And even the characters, just to give you some flavor here, I got to play Abraham Lincoln. I know I mentioned that I wanted to be both Franklin Pierce and Teddy Roosevelt, but I ended up being Abe Lincoln. And you know, he has like a special ability where he can take off his top hat, and you know, he can spend a Benny. You know, you'll learn about those if you don't know the system, and you can spend a Benny and pull a mundane object out of his hat. So I pulled everything from like a rifle scope to a series of campaign buttons, and I think the last thing
I pulled was a radio.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, things like Bill Clinton's weapon is an exploding cigar. You know, Jimmy Carter has the ability to summon healing peanuts from the ground. So it was just I just thought that all the stuff, the detail you put into it was really good. So I think that a lot of people came up to you and suggested that you run this game either at Gen Con or somewhere around the Gen Con time frame. What are you going to give that a shot?
I might. I need to see what my schedule is for Gen Con. But
okay, yeah. That
with the wedding on with Cody and Kaylin coming up, time off is at a premium, but I may run it on Saturday at Gen Con. We will see.
Well, if you happen to find it in your Gen Con event catalog, or even if you participate in maybe the KFG Wednesday gaming, we'll talk about that a little bit later on as we get closer to Gen Con and you see that game. Definitely sign up for it. It was a great time. What other stuff did you play at Hoosier Con?
I played for the first time the Totally Insane card game.
Oh, what's that all about?
It's kind of like Uno on steroids.
Okay.
It's at one point enough people piled onto me where I had a draw 40.
Draw 40.
It's
how many cards are in the deck?
Well, there's quite a bit of cards, but it takes a little more getting used to than Uno, but it was a heck of a lot of fun. It's a good kind of con game, and we had probably 12-13 people playing at the table, so it was a big game, but it was a lot of fun. And it's a very the tide can change, because I got that draw 40, so you know I had a hand of 40 to 50 cards. But then like one of the very next plays where we just handed our cards two people down to the right.
So the person
two down the right got, you know, 50 cards.
Oh, that's fun.
The other main game
sounds Flux like a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little more chaotic than Flux, if you can believe it. Yeah. The other game that I played for the first time and really liked was Are You a Werewolf?
Oh, really?
Are You a Werewolf? If you're not familiar, it's based off of like there are many different names for like mafia or assassins or things like that. It's basically just a social kind of mob mentality game, and we'll link to it. But I played two nights. The first night was there were these two people that God love them, you know, they've played quite a bit of Werewolf, but they were the Werewolf pros.
On the pro tour.
Yeah, and they kept asking, they're like, let's take a quick survey, how many people is it their first game? And you know, it's my first game of Werewolf, but I'd played games like this before. And they're like, well new players will a lot of time do this, and you know, experienced players like us, you know, it just kept going on.
Oh,
and
my
like,
gosh,
shut up.
At what point did you shoot them in the face?
Yeah. Yeah, we ended up killing them. But, I mean, they were nice. They kept beating it over our heads that they were experienced with it. And
yeah.
I gave a Game On business card to every time someone died.
Uh-huh.
I gave him a Game On business card. So
oh, that's funny.
If you're listening, thanks for dying and listening to the show. But the first night was fun. Then we played again the second night. And my fiance and I were werewolves. And we played about the perfect game. I mean, I think one person suspected us, and he kept getting shouted down.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we just went beginning to end, and no one had an idea. It was fantastic.
Now, while that game was going on, I had the opportunity to play a game of Battlestar Galactica. I actually ended up playing two games of that. If you listened to the last episode, you heard about our game with the Stucker family, with Alan and his brood of daughters.
That's right.
But on Friday...
Go Cylons.
Yeah. But on Friday night, I had the opportunity to play... with another listener, Mr. Morgan Merchant, and his brother, and also with Single L and another friend of ours, David. And so we got to play the full game of that, and that was a ton of fun. Once again, the Cylons triumphed, but...
That's how it always goes, apparently.
Did the best we could, yeah. So,
but I've talked to some people that they say where... when you first teach it to a group, the Cylons will pretty much always win, but if you continually play it with the same group, that the humans always win.
Oh,
just
okay.
Because you can read people a lot better... And if the humans know who to trust from the beginning, they can they can win much easier than if there's kind of this cloud of distrust.
I feel like that's a game, and I really love the game, but I feel like it's the more I play it, I think my love for it is going to decline mm-hmm. a little bit. Because you do sort of figure out, it's like to use the example of a game that you don't like, Puerto Rico.
Nope.
You sort of figure out a strategy at a certain point, and you sort of half solve the game, and that makes it a little bit less fun. So there's a lot of elements in that game that are going to make it chaotic, but I'm not so sure if my love for it might be waning just a little bit, but. But we had a great time, though, and also had the opportunity to play a game of Formula D, the new edition, with about three other guys, and that was a lot of fun. That was the first time that I'd really been able to play the game with all of the rules for, like, body damage and brakes and tires and gearbox and all that kind of stuff, and it was a very, very exciting game, and so we were spread out at the beginning, and we got into the turns, and it was really close, and it's one of those games where you got four grown men sitting over this board pushing around little plastic cars with your fingers and rolling dice. It's the dumbest thing in the world, but it's you know,
Formula D is
fun's
awesome.
Fun.
Yeah. Formula D is awesome.
Formula D. So we got to play some of those games. I actually had a great opportunity to meet up with Stephen Conway from the Spiel podcast. A lot of you listeners probably listen to that show. And if you don't, then you should. But no, it's a great podcast. And so I ran into him, and he and I and a couple other guys ended up playing a game of Toledo, which is a...
Toledo. It's about Ohio.
It's a game about, I guess, Renaissance era Spain, where you're making swords and delivering them to the... at the Alcazar, I think
that screams excitement.
And we also had an opportunity to play the game Witch's Brew, which is a really cool.
Still want
to
play that.
That's yeah, we'll have to get that one out. That's a fun card game where you're trying to get potions and spells and victory points and all the things like that. That's a Euro game. Had a great time at HoosierCon. Last thing I want to mention about that is that for some reason the luck was with me, and I won not one. But two of the door prize packages.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So I got the package that was some magic cards and other stuff like that. And I also got a nice stack of board games to add to the collection. So it was a great time. So thanks to all of the folks who were so welcoming to us at HoosierCon, the organizers, and everybody that was there. I think it's going to be even better next year.
Thanks again to the Stucker Caravan for making the trip.
We had a great time. That was one of our highlights of the whole thing, I think.
And we received a few emails in the Game On inbox, but one in particular asked about board games for his gaming group that is normally a D&D kind of RPG-heavy group, but when they have a lean night, what games would benefit them? And John, you have the email up. Can you read it for us?
Yeah. This is from listener Michael Katz, and he says, Cody and John, since you guys are the Fantasy Flight experts...
All right.
Okay.
We're not on their payroll yet.
Working on it, though. I thought I could ask you guys for some advice. I'm looking for a board game for the nights when my D&D group is unable to reach critical mass, you know, only about two to four people. I'd like something that at least simulates the cooperative dungeon crawl feel. I was looking at Runebound, Talisman, Descent, Battle Lore, etc., but I can't find out what the differences between them are and can't shell out $300 to try them all. We feel your pain.
Right.
I'd also take advice about games from other vendors too, with the little smiley there. Thanks for the podcast. I had a fantastic afternoon of Red November. Thanks to you guys. So thanks for that email, and thanks for the kind words there, Michael. And Cody, why don't you field this one? And what are some games, you know, that might fit the bill for this?
Well, I mean, obviously Descent, that's your big one. I mean, that is... You can play it with two people. You can play it with just a few. And if you want to get, you know, pretty much just simulate a dungeon crawl, a cooperative thing, that's Descent. I mean,
And you've mentioned that with 4th edition D&D having come out in the last year, that it almost is getting close. Descent is getting closer to D&D, or D&D is getting closer to Descent.
And when I sent Michael the original email, the major downside I could see with playing Descent when you're not playing D&D is that you could get the rules mixed up, because they both work on a grid. They both have similar rules, but different here and there.
Yeah, the attack of opportunity is the thing that comes to mind, that if you're playing Descent, you're darting between the bad guys, and they're, you know, do I provoke it? No, you
exactly.
don't.
Exactly. You know, whereas in D&D, typically you want to clear a room before you move on to the next one. With Descent, sometimes time may not be on your side, and you just need to push through and leave a beast man or two.
Right.
And again, with the Road to Legend expansion, you can even pick up your Descent games and only play them in 1 or 2 hour chunks if you want. So
yeah, I think Cody and I are actually considering, I have Descent in pretty much all the expansions, but we haven't cracked open that Road to Legend expansion yet. We may start up a a mini campaign. If nothing else, just to sort of get that rolling so that we can pull out and play 1 to 2 hour games of sure. Descent every now and then.
Yep.
So that would be my recommendation too. In general, I think that would be a good one to pull out on.
If you're going to buy one of those that you mentioned, buy Descent. I mean, it's probably the most expensive out of the four you mentioned, but that's going to most closely simulate the feel. Runebound's a close second, but it's more of an overland, kind of a grand epic adventure sort of thing. It's got probably about the same detail as Descent does, but you're not really going down and fighting monsters in a dungeon. It's more of kind of just a larger scale.
And that game also... which I love Runebound, but it's sort of the time for it exponentially increases with the number of players you have.
Uh-huh.
If you play with two players, that's a pretty good game. I would never want to play Runebound with four players because
no.
There's just not much to do when it's not your turn. And so you could just find yourself with a whole lot of downtime.
Yeah. Then you have Talisman, which it's always going to be a sentimental favorite. It was the first kind of non-traditional board game I ever played. It's more of like your beer and pretzels. Runebound, you know, you just roll some dice, you know, it's essentially a really fancy roll and move game. It's fun. It can take forever if you have a lot of people just because you kind of get into a never ending thing, but it's fun. It's light. I've kind of, my love for it's diminished over the years. I see it for what it is. I'm like, oh
yeah, it's a sentimental pick.
It's a fun pick. You can probably pick up a copy of the old, the original fourth edition from Black Industries.
Version. Oh yeah,
you can
get that
for
pretty
cheap.
Yeah, and if you want to spend more money, you can get the upgrade pack
sure.
from Fantasy Flight. If you want to go maybe even lighter than that, and sort of a different, sort of a snarkier direction, you could go with Cutthroat Caverns,
uh-huh.
which is a more of a card game where it's a semi-cooperative dungeon crawl where you're trying to sort of stab your buddies in the back there while helping them fight the monsters. That mm-hmm. one's fun too.
And then the last one he mentioned was Battlelore, which is actually Days of Wonder game. But
it was a Days of Wonder.
It was. Oh, it is Fantasy Flight.
Now it's a Fantasy Flight game.
I'm sorry, Fantasy Flight games.
They're slowly taking over the entire gaming industry.
I know, man. Well, I'm definitely not going to get on their payroll.
Nope.
But Battlelore, it's mainly a two-player game. You know.
Yeah.
You could play a team game if you want, but I don't think that would be fun.
Yeah, I think they have some versions where you have a bigger map and you can play with four or five people. But
yeah, and it's going to simulate kind of large troop movement, overland combat. You know, very. A lot more historically accurate, things like that, the French and the English going at each other, but
I was
going to
say
magic.
Historically accurate with goblins. And
with goblins. I mean, I guess just that style of combat. I don't know.
Well, you're right. It's the same system as Commands and Colors Ancients and Memoir 44, which are more historically mm-hmm. based, but that's really almost, it's got more of a war game feel to
it
than it does a dungeon crawl.
That's probably not what you want to do. It's a great game,
yeah.
and I stress that, but it's probably not what you're looking for. So hopefully, Michael, we were able to help you there. I pick out some good games to play. And I also mentioned games like Wizards of the Coast put out 3 Dragon Annie a few years back.
Infighting is a recent one. It's like a dice game.
And those capture the D&D feel, but if you just feel like playing a light card or a dice game, those might be the ones for you.
Bottom line, there's a ton of really great games in that genre out there, so definitely go check them out.
Absolutely.
We also had one final email from Morgan Merchant, who is
the big winner.
Yeah, not only did he get to play the BSG game with him, but he was the big winner of our contest in last episode. Got a big pile of games and
Teresa,
and just let us know that he hasn't had an opportunity yet to play those games, but Gift Trap is looking interesting to his non gamer wife and he.
Conform.
I actually ran into him on Saturday at HoosierCon, and he had won another prize package from the door prizes.
He said his new game budget is now slashed.
Yeah.
Like he can't go out and buy new games.
Because he just had a huge stack of stuff. So hopefully he'll get a chance to play some of those games.
Maybe he can pick up BSG on the sly.
He said he was going to try to get it. And actually, he mentioned to me something that I thought was real interesting. And it was actually a very nice compliment to us. We appreciate it. That he actually works as a postal worker. And so he is listens to about 70 hours of podcasts per week, not just gaming stuff, but all different kinds. And he says that usually when he listens to the first few episodes of a podcast, he has to kind of slog through, while they are working their way up to having a decent amount of quality. And he very graciously mentioned that he thought that our show from the very beginning sounded good. We very much appreciate that, and glad to have you as a listener. So thanks so much.
Favorite podcast that's not ours.
Favorite podcast that's not ours.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I enjoy the spiel.
You enjoy this? It's fine. Show.
Favorite podcast that's not ours.
Oh, Fear the Boot.
Oh, you know, that's a close. That's
FearTheBoot.com.
Close second.
Check him out.
That's a great one, yeah. Dan and his flowing locks.
Oh, beautiful. Well, as we move from that uncomfortable topic, we're going to get into gaming collections in our big deal.
Let's do it. And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal? Welcome to our big deal. This episode is entitled The Collector's Edition because we're going to be talking about game collections and how we've built our own collections and maybe some tips and tricks on how you can build yours.
Rob a bank.
That's probably what you'll need because money will be involved. In
the Game On with Cody and John podcast does not condone robbing of banks.
Right. I had to think about that for a second, but yeah, I guess we don't condone that.
No.
You know, so we just want to talk a little bit about game collections. Now, when you start off as a new gamer in this hobby, you know, you probably already have a couple of games in your collection, the mass market games like Life and Clue and Monopoly and all of those kind of things. And, you know, we would not suggest that you throw any of those away.
No, there's a lot. Maybe Life.
I almost want to buy a copy. I was just talking about that with my wife the other day. I almost want to buy a copy of that game because, you know, I think my kids might enjoy that one.
Maybe.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe not.
But, you know, as you start to get involved in hobby gaming, you know, you probably make that very first game purchase. You know, for me, my first hobby game purchase was, like many others, Ticket to Ride.
Hmm.
And it just happened in the last few years, I guess. And so from there, I just sort of built on that. And, you know, now I have a collection of about 150 games, something like that total.
Probably dropping the bucket to some of our listeners.
That's the thing, yeah. It's like, to any of my non-gamer friends, that sounds like a huge amount. But, you know, then you look on BoardGameGeek and people have, you know, 1,000. You know, of course, you know, our podcasting buddy Tom Vassell has, you know, more than 1,000 games in his collection, I think. So, you know, so when you're building that kind of collection, I guess there's several ways you can go about it. One of them would just be... impulse buy, you know, buy whatever you see. I've done my fair share.
Tell us about it.
You know, I think that Tanga.com probably owes a little bit of their profit margin to my contributions. But, you know, there's a lot of things you just might see that look shiny. But, you know, you might have a more purposeful way of building your collection. And I think Cody probably, tell us about your game collection and maybe the method that you've used to build your game collection.
I'll throw you the Jones theory of game libraries and game collections.
Let's hear it.
I have maybe a fifth of the games John does. I have 30, and that would be probably the upper. I'm just ballparking it here.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is the right way. This is just kind of how my brain works. I tend not to have multiple games that have the same kind of type, mm-hmm. Meaning that cooperative games. I only own BSG, and it's like I wouldn't really consider buying Shadows Over Camelot. Sure, it's a totally different type of cooperative game, but in my mind, if I'm in the mood to play a cooperative game,
that's going to be the one you
pick. I'll just pull cooperative game. You know, it's almost like they could all just have generic, like, uh-huh. You know, this is gateway game, this is cooperative game, this is, you know,
okay,
resource
okay.
management game or whatever. And I don't think there may be one or two exceptions. I don't think there's a game in my collection that I had not previously played before.
Okay.
So
that's huge.
I'm very reticent to buy a game if I don't, because games get so pricey.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm kind of the opposite with RPGs. I would say I'm almost completely opposite with RPGs. I will pick up an RPG I've never played in a second. I'm like, oh, that looks neat. I'll buy it. And I'll end up never playing it.
Uh-huh.
But board games, I have to have played it or have heard very, very good things about it.
Wow, we are like diametrically opposite in that respect, because I'm that way about board games, especially the ones that you can get at a discount from some of the online retailers or you know, Tango, you know, previously Posey.com when they were doing a lot
they're
of games.
They're at a discount for a reason.
But no, I found some really good ones for discounted prices. But you know, you make a good point there. It's you know, you just kind of pick them up because they look shiny and they don't cost that much, and then you never get a chance to play them. But RPGs for me, I own the Savage Worlds Explorers Edition.
A fine product.
Mainly because it was $10, and that didn't seem like much.
Normal price, $10.
Yeah, no,
we'll talk
good.
About that later.
Yep. I have the Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. I haven't even bought 4.0 yet. I have the Serenity role-playing game, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't. Those are the only games I really play. And even Serenity, I've only played at conventions, but I'm kind of the opposite there. I'm not going to pick up a book because I'm not much of a reader, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I'm not just going to sit and pour through the setting and go, wow, this is neat. But for board games, I guess I just think about the fact that, well, someone might come over and, hey, let's break out a game. I always like to have new games mm-hmm. available to play, sometimes to the neglect of my older games.
Right. Okay, so when you said you're going to pull games out for people, so say it's a cooperative game, what makes you decide between Shadows Over Camelot or Battlestar Galactica or, God forbid, Pandemic?
See, I guess I feel like there's more variables involved than just that kind of a genre. So here's the cooperative games that I own. I own Battlestar Galactica, Pandemic, I own Shadows Over Camelot, and I just bought Ghost Stories. And I'm trying to think. I think that might be it as far as the kind of big cooperative.
You could lump Fury of Dracula in, I guess.
Which you own.
Which I own, but I almost think that has enough points of difference.
And, I think you're right. Yeah.
And plus, it's an awesome game. So
that trumps all. Right?
Yeah.
But I have those four cooperative games, but I would not. I would pull those out with very different crowds. Like the Battlestar Galactica, I'm going to pull out. I'm not going to pull that out with a non-gamer crowd. And I'm not. I would be more likely to pull that out with people who are at least familiar with the show, because I think that kind of enhances the experience.
Yeah,
that's also a game that's more than 2 hours long to play usually.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Pandemic is something that I can teach to anyone, including a non-gamer, and be up and running and playing and be done with the game in 45 minutes. So to me, that fills a different role than just, you know, it's another cooperative game. Ghost Stories is a game that is extremely difficult, and so that's where I'm going to get the more hardcore gamers that are interested in really strategizing and want that kind of an experience. And then Shadows Over Camelot is kind of maybe just one step up from Pandemic as far as it may be even on the same level, except it takes a little longer to play. Where you can get anybody. My wife, that's probably one of her favorite board games, and she's not really that much into gaming. So I guess I look at there being more than just it's a cooperative game. And so that's kind of how I would choose those. That's why I have multiple of those kind of games.
A compelling argument.
Thank you.
Compelling argument. I just, I find that if I would have that many of a genre, you know, of a, I guess, you know, we'll say the cooperative games to continue using that, I just feel like they wouldn't hit the table more than maybe once or twice a year.
And I think you're absolutely right.
It's like, if I feel like I'm getting more bang for my buck if, okay, we're going to play a cooperative game, I'm going to pull out BSG or whatever. Actually, if I had my druthers and would pick it over, I'd probably pick Shadows Over Camelot just because it appeals to more people.
Right.
But BSG, fine game.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then again, if I have at least a few of those people over again, I host gaming at my apartment frequently, I can pull out BSG and at least some of them know. They're like, okay, that's a cooperative game, that's a sci-fi game. I remember enough of that, so where if I have to teach the rules, it goes a little quicker. And I guess I'm more practical with it.
And I think that you also don't really enjoy teaching rules.
Oh,
as much
I hate
as
teaching
I do.
Rules. I'm bad at it.
And so for me, that's almost part of the fun, is to pull out a new game that maybe I've learned, teach everybody how to play. I mean, I don't. Maybe it's just the sort of teacher built into me. But
I will always defer that to anyone else if I can, because I hate teaching rules.
And the funny thing is that you're actually pretty good.
I don't think you
really are. But so that's you know, that's one thing. But you're absolutely right, because I'm finding that a game like Shadows Over Camelot, it is only coming to the table about once or twice a year now. And a lot of the games that are in my collection, that like Runebound's a great example, going back to the email from Michael Katz. I mean, I've owned that game for 2 or 3 years now, and we've played some games of it. But
that was one of the first games we played together.
Yeah, but when was the last time we played it? It's been
it was then.
It's been like 2 years right. Probably. So, you know, it's just not going to come to the table as much because there are other options. So I definitely see where you're coming from, that the games that you have in your collection, even though it's smaller, are going to get played more often. Now, do you think that you're more likely to get tired of your games? Because I'll tell you that having as many games as I have, which is still not that many, if I pull out something like Runebound today to play it, I mean, I'm going to be excited about it because I haven't played it in a long time and I know that it's a good game. But if all I had as my overland dungeon crawling adventure game was Runebound and I played it every 2 weeks for a year, I'd probably be sick of it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you play it every 2 weeks, then yeah, but...
Or, you know, even every month, I'd say.
Even every month's a stretch because... I'll explain, at least the way my gaming group works, and this is not a blanket statement, but just to throw out an example.
Yeah.
Three Fridays, we meet on Friday nights, and three Fridays out of the month, we do a different RPG that someone runs.
Okay.
We're kind of an RPG-focused group, but the fourth is always open gaming, and we'll play kind of one heavier game, and I define heavy 2 or 3 hour game, and then followed by a bunch of light ones.
Yeah.
Or surrounded by a bunch of light ones. And that's once a month, and we won't be playing the same thing every time. You know, we may try the cooperative thing one time, and then we won't do a cooperative game for many months. And I feel, even with a much, much smaller library, I've got enough variety in there to when we eventually come back around to the cooperative game, it's still like, oh, we haven't played this in a while, but I know how to play it.
Okay, yeah, I can see that point.
And I don't feel like I'm going to get any games like Runebound where it's never going to hit the table again and just gather dust.
Yeah. I find that's a very good point. I find that even worse than that is all the games that I have in my collection that I haven't played. Now, we've mentioned the Spiel podcast a couple times on this show, which is a great show, but they almost kind of revel in the fact that they have this list of literally over 200 games between them that they have never played. And so they you know, they try to play as many of off their list as they can, but they're always buying new games and everything, just as I do. I mean, I think there's probably about 25 or 30 games in my collection right now out of 150 that I've never played before. And so for me, that's even worse because then I have to compete between, well, I haven't played Shadows Over Camelot in about 6 months, but then I have all these games I have never played, and I want to pull those out, but you got to go through the rules learning and all that kind of
right.
stuff. So that's the double-edged sword of being able to have a big collection but not get anything to the table.
Yeah, and that's where the pragmatic side of me comes in. And we'll actually talk about this in the Savage Worlds review, the Deadlands review, is that like with RPGs, ideally, if I could get it down to one system that could run everything I'd want to run, I would do that.
Yeah.
Just because so I could get very good at it, I could become an expert at the rules and know any problems that come up. And in a way, that kind of translates to board games. Like if I have 150 games with 150 sets of rules, I'm always going to feel like I'm just wandering in the dark on it. To whereas if BSG, that's my cooperative game, I know the rules on that because I've played it. It's come to the table more because it's the only option there.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And you can always trade out.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that if another game... Right now, BSG is kind of the hot cooperative game
uh-huh.
for you. If another game came out in the next year that you played, maybe I probably will have bought it, and you play it with me.
Yeah, that's another thing. You just get someone with a big gaming library, and you don't have to worry about it.
You're in pretty good shape, aren't you?
There we go.
I think you owe me some money.
Whatever. I made the logo.
And it's a fine logo.
Thank you.
If a new game comes out of the same genre, I mean, would you buy that game and then would sell or trade the other one? Or what do you think?
I would play the new game first.
Of course.
The Jones Theory.
Right.
And it would depend. I mean, if it were... I'm not saying it's a hard and fast rule, like, there can only be one cooperative game in my library at any time. It's like, that's not a hard and fast rule, but...
Sure. You've already broken that because you're Dracula and BSG.
Not apples and oranges.
Yeah, okay, sure.
But it depends on where my group would be with BSG. I actually probably would maybe trade it or sell it or something, or give it away to someone.
Because you really, that right there...
I strongly believe in that...
I agree. You know, I respect that definitely, but that is the trouble that I have with this line between being a gamer and being a collector. When I started gaming, I in no way wanted to become a game collector. And I, you know, I look at my living room now, and I have these bookshelves full of games, and I'm just kind of shake my head and go, "How is this? How have I turned into a collector?" And yet I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to be at peace with the fact that I'm both a gamer and a collector. And part of it is due to the fact that I can't really do what you're doing, because I would get that new cooperative game and I would say, this is a better game, let's say, you know, the new shiny or whatever, and I would probably play this more and I like this better, but I would still look at BSG and say, yeah, but that has that element to it, and Ghost Stories has this element to it, and you know, and I would want to keep them in my collection because they fill that slightly different need.
Right.
But I'm fooling myself because that just it just decreases the number of times that those other games are going to get to the table.
And the one question I ask myself that determines whether it stays on the shelf or not is, do you feel lucky? Well, not really. But is
do you punk?
is it would be with this new game, the new shiny, mm-hmm. Will BSG still hit the table with enough regularity that it makes sense for me to keep it?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then I can trade it for a game that maybe would fit better in that, or I can give it to someone who, or sell it to someone. Well, sell it to charity.
Yeah.
You know, give it to someone where they can get more use out of it than I can. With RPG books, I completely agree with you. I'm a collector. I get things that I probably should have no business getting.
Yeah.
But with board games, I'm very pragmatic, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to be playing BSG that much anymore because New Shiny the board game came out.
But it could be because it's books, and books mm-hmm. don't take up that much space, and, right. and a lot of people like to have big bookshelves full of many, many different books. And that kind of leads into the next thing I just wanted to talk about, which is one thing about gaming as a hobby, we've talked about it before, is that it's relatively inexpensive as far as what you get for your money. So yeah. you spend $20 or $30 or $40 or $50 on a board game, you know, you're going to get a lot of use out of that.
RPGs even more so.
Right. Oh, yeah. If you find the right RPG.
It's like pennies on the dollar for you.
Especially Savage Worlds. I know we're going to talk about that later. But so, you know, something like that, building a collection of games is a lot easier than building a collection of Ming vases. I don't know.
Nice.
You know,
very nice.
Of things that are much more expensive. You know, if you want to build a really nice gun collection, you know, of like antique guns or you know what I'm saying?
Shoot on.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of some examples. Yeah. But you know, compared to other hobbies, it's a lot less expensive.
Baseball card collecting.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Some of those like memorabilia cards that are really expensive.
Cubs World Series Championship hats.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. Got a big collection.
It's getting baseball season.
Yeah, I know. You're getting the itch, aren't you?
Cubs suck. So.
But you know, something like DVDs. I mean, I know people who have hundreds of DVDs in their collection. You know, we talk about games hitting the table. How often is a particular movie going to hit your DVD player?
Here's the Jones theory and work at DVDs. I have not bought a DVD for coming up on about a year because of the Blu-ray switchover.
Oh, you're waiting.
I don't own a Blu-ray. I don't even own an HDTV. I probably will not own one in the next few months. But I know eventually I will own one, and those DVDs will not be as useful to me. And
so you put the kibosh on your DVD purchases.
I've not bought any DVDs.
That's probably pretty smart. Although I'm really tempted to get the West Wing complete series DVDs. We've been watching a lot.
Yeah, that might be an exception because it's a TV show.
It's like $200 though.
Well, you buy it, and
four board games. I got to look at it that way. So anyway, you know, whether you're someone with a large collection or a smaller collection, you know, think real carefully about how you want to build your collection. You know, do you want to be a collector, or do you want to be a gamer, or do you want to be both? So,
we definitely want to get your thoughts on this one. So definitely we'll post a thread in the guild about it, or send us an email to the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And we'd like to know your theory, whether you support John, support me, or kind of have a separate, independent, libertarian theory on games and collecting them.
Yeah, let us know about your collection and how you built it, and maybe, you know, how you go about
pictures. I'll take a picture of the gaming closet.
Okay, yeah, I'll take a picture of a couple of the bookshelves, I guess.
Yeah,
We can put those in the guild. So, but we'd love to hear about your game collections and how you built those.
Definitely. Well, we're going to talk about a game you might want to add to your collection coming up in Deadlands Reloaded.
That's right. It's time to get into the Weird West.
Buy, try, or deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started.
Welcome to Buy, Try, or Deny. This episode, we're going to be taking a look at our very first role-playing game.
The time has come.
I know. It's
Be still my heart.
It's only taken us 16 episodes, but we're there finally.
The occasional RPG.
And one of the most exciting things about this is that Cody is going to be taking the lead on the rules explanation.
I wouldn't say it's exciting.
It's a good thing, because Cody is definitely the role-playing game guy.
I apologize in advance.
So today we're going to be taking a look at Deadlands Reloaded, and this is kind of a reissue of the original Deadlands role-playing game to kind of make it compatible with the Savage World system. So it's released by the Pinnacle Entertainment Group, and Cody, why don't you just go ahead and take it away. Tell us about Deadlands Reloaded and the Savage World system.
Okay, I'll start with Deadlands Reloaded. Deadlands is a setting that is made to be used with the Savage World system, and Deadlands is actually... It's at least 10, 15 years old. It's got some history behind it. And it was originally kind of its own game. It deals mainly kind of an alternate history, 1870s. The Civil War really never ended. It kind of just went into a stalemate, and the Confederate States are their own entity. And you have kind of...
As well they should be.
Well, I cannot agree or disagree.
I thought you were going to take the Indiana hard line as the guy.
States' rights, you know. Yeehaw.
Ron Paul, very good.
Yeah. But, and there, it mainly focuses on the West in that there were these evil spirits that had kind of come up, and they were bound back into the earth, but it caused kind of weird things to be going on. This is just a hard and fast. You can read a lot of the lore in the book, but think of it as like a spaghetti western meets horror meets almost kind of sci-fi in
sort
a way.
Sort of steampunk almost.
Sure, yeah. There'd be some of that in there. Uh-huh. And you get this this weird mishmash of a genre that actually really, really works, because with a straight western, I think if you played a few sessions of that, I think it could get kind of tedious.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know there's a role-playing game called Aces and Eights that has... It literally has rules for cattle driving.
Really?
It's like...
That sounds great.
Like, all right, you know. But I think, you know, where you always have that infusion of fantasy or horror or sci-fi, there's always something around the bend that you may not be expecting, and I think it keeps you on your toes. And it's a bit of a darker Western, too. You can really kind of play off that. But anyway, Deadlands Reloaded is... basically a reimagining of that setting to fit with the Savage World system. Savage Worlds is by default, a settingless system. It's, I guess you may want to call it a generic system. That their tagline is fast, furious, fun. Their idea is that it should be easy to prep for game masters. It should be easy for players to pick up the rules. And it should always kind of have maybe like a cinematic feel to it, like, it shouldn't get into a grind of long tactical explanations. It should be story first, and the mechanics just help toward that story, and everyone just has a fast, furious, and fun time. And I discovered this originally. I had played a role-playing game called Hollow Earth Expedition, which is a fantastic game. It's a pulp RPG, you know, kind of your 1930s Indiana Jones meets the Mummy sort of a idea.
That's a great one.
Yeah, it is a good game. There were a few things I didn't like about it that made me want to explore other systems, and I'd heard all this hullabaloo about Savage Worlds, and I finally tried it. I'd been running kind of a long Hollow Earth Expedition campaign, and the last session of it, we actually switched to Savage Worlds for it, which I don't know how good of an idea that was at the time. But
no, having played in the game, it was actually really good. Yeah. It was seamless, I thought.
And it really makes it... You're surprised at how fast it runs, because once you get the rules down, they're very simple, but they can handle a variety of situations. One of my favorite is that with combat, you have what are called wild cards, and wild cards being kind of the more starring role enemies, you know, and all of the players are considered wild cards. So they're your main, I guess, players, characters in the adventure. And then you have the extras, which are the mooks, which are, you know, the you know, crewman five. They run out there. And the idea is that enemies will either be up, down, or off the table. You don't really track hit points that much. It's either you're up, you're kind of shaken, or you're incapacitated, you're off the table. And so GM doesn't have to keep these detailed notes. It's like, well, crewman 5 has 37 hit points remaining, and crewman number 7, well, he's got 42 hit points remaining, you know. It's very, very simple, and it just keeps it moving.
It's a role-playing game for people who are bad at math.
there's actually a little bit of math in it, but if you can do multiples of 4, you're okay.
Oh, yeah.
There are some mechanics in there. There's a thing called the wild die, which the aforementioned wild cards use. This is to demonstrate kind of that extra luck that heroes and villains might have on their side that crewman number 5 maybe wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And what's nice is even if you're really bad at a skill, you'll always roll a d6 with anything you roll, and you get to take the higher of the two. So sometimes your wild die can... Even if you're rolling, let's say, a D12 for one of your stats, you could roll a D6 on your, roll a high number on your wild die and go with that.
So let's say that I was in a situation where I was, say, fighting with a knife, and I wanted to go and stab a guy.
Okay.
And so I would have a fighting skill, right?
Right. There are many skills in the game, and one of them would be fighting. And there are also non-combat skills, you know. Tracking and healing and boating. There is a boating skill. I've not seen it really.
Drinking,
yeah.
And so if I had a particular fight, the fighting skill is, or any of the skills is a die type.
Right. And they go from a D4, a four-sided die, that would be kind of, you know, you're not very good at it, up to a D12, which is you're really good at it. And that is the kind of die you roll along with the wild die. Okay. And the wild die is always a D6, no matter what. So say you had a D8 in fighting, and you're going to stab me with a knife, and you roll both the dice, and say the D8 comes up as a 3, but the wild die comes up as a 5, you get to take the higher of the two.
Which would be the 5.
So thank you. So usually you'll compare it again, against a different target number, which usually is 4, but in some cases, like with fighting, you would go off maybe your opponent's parry or things like that. There's usually a target number you're going after. And the system even rewards you if you do it very well, if you get something called a raise. If you get, those are the multiples of 4 I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For every 4 you get over the target number, that's 1 raise or 2 raises or 3 raises. So,
and you'll get additional damage.
Yeah, bonus damage,
like
or maybe if you're casting a spell, the spell does a little, has a little extra something on it, you know.
Okay.
All sorts of neat things. And what's really nice about the dice system is what they call acing, which other systems would call exploding dice.
Exploding dice. That sounds exciting.
If you roll the highest number on the die, so say with your D8 you rolled an 8, you get to take that 8 and then re-roll the dice and add that to your total.
Just that D8, right?
Just that D8, right.
Okay.
So say you rolled your D8, you got an 8, and then since it's the highest number on the die, you get to roll it again and add your new result to the 8. And the thing is, and this was very prevalent during my Ex-Presidents game, this can continue to keep going. I mean, you can get many exploding dice, just bam, 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 bam.
Can I tell the story?
Yeah, absolutely, tell the story.
So in this Ex-Presidents game, there was a situation where one of the characters, Teddy Roosevelt, had to go on an aerial wolf hunt in New Wasilla, Alaska with Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives you an idea for the flavor of this game, right? And so they had to shoot a wolf from a helicopter, and part of the game, part of the whether you won or not is how well you shot the wolf. And so we told the Teddy Roosevelt character to, you know, take the shot, and he had a +2 bonus because he had a rifle scope and that he'd gotten from Abraham Lincoln's hat. And so then the player who was playing, she rolled. And she got, I think she might have been on her wild die, got a 6.
Mm-hmm.
And she rolled it again and got a 6 and rolled it again. And by the time after it was all said and done, she had rolled a 30.
And the target number was a 4.
Right. So that is a success with, that's hard math. How many raises? Like 4?
No, that's at least
5, 6.
6-ish.
Many, many raises.
Yeah, but so, you know, she slaughtered the wolf.
I think Cody described it as you shoot it exactly through the center of its eye.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of your cinematic action, you know, that perfectly placed shot.
Yeah.
And things like that. And that gives a sense of excitement, I think, with, you know, the exploding dice, because even if you're bad at something, you can kind of come in and have that cinematic moment where you take the wheel and you manage to drive it down the street through traffic and, you know, avoiding camels and whatnot. I don't know why camels would be in the street.
But you could avoid them.
But you avoided them. And that's a really neat feel to it, in that you always have a shot at something, and it makes for a there's always a chance at it. You know, there's never like, oh, there's no idea I've got, you know, I'm going to fail this one for sure.
Right.
And the other element that makes the Savage World system kind of, I wouldn't say unique, but it adds a lot of fun to it, are the bennies. Now, mini games have the equivalent of like action points or style points or fate points or whatever points.
Plot points.
Plot points. There you go. Yeah. Savage Worlds has these things called bennies, which are short for benefits. Now, I think the name is stupid. I call them style points.
Sure, yeah.
And basically, you start with one, and then the GM can give you more at his discretion based on, you know, if you're role-playing flaws or hindrances in this game, as they call them. You know, you might get hindrances like you could have them as bad as one arm, or you could have callous or condescending or other role-playing flaws. And if you really play that out, like Ronald Reagan had hard of hearing, and the player was just milking that for all it's worth, you know. So, you know, if he did it where I thought it was particularly funny, where it got his character into trouble, you know, he took kind of a dive to really roleplay the character, I'd give him a Benny for it. And you can use those Bennies to re-roll any dice roll you don't like. You can use them to, it helps in soaking damage and kind of helping yourself in combat should you become shaken up and can almost... not really that great in combat. It can get you out of such of a condition.
It can sort of, it's sort of like a rule breaker or a story changer, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, that was a really bad roll, but I'm going to spin this Benny, and we'll give that another try. So it kind of gives you another cinematic element to throw in there.
Now, how does that compare to, like, in to use an example, like the Cortex system, like the Serenity and the Battlestar Galactica role-playing game? A lot of times you can use the plot points or whatever you call those in that game to... you know, to change the story in sort of a role playing way, like, you know, you can ask the GM, is there a telephone pole next to where I am? And he'll say, no, there isn't. And you hand him a point and say, no, there is a telephone pole.
Not out of the book, but I've always found it to where I'll do it. Like if you need a mundane item or something, it's like, well, my character didn't pack a rope, but this Benny says I did pack a rope. And it's the GM's discretion. Okay. You know, the player can't say, no, seriously, I've got a rope. You have to kind of work with it. But generally, you know, if it's a minor kind of shift like that, I'll do that, especially if it helps the story and it just makes it more fun. I'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah, spend your point and do it, you know.
Yeah, and that's one of the – it seems like this is real a real focused on that fun aspect, the Fast Furious fun.
Right. And what's really nice about it is, I mentioned Deadlands was a setting book for it. There's other various setting books from everything to sci-fi to pirates to superheroes. But you can take just the base book, which is $10, retails for $10, which is pretty amazing. And you can play straight out of the book with that. You could do a pulp game or a horror game or a, you know, just a 21st century type of game. And the way they build things, it's very easy to make your own setting. And you can do fantasy, you can do pretty much any setting you could think of. If you just want to sit down and put the work into it, and it's really not a lot of work to prep a game. For me to prep a normal game, maybe 20-30 minutes with this. I mean, it's just, I kind of stat up the main bad guys and stat up what, you know, the extras would be like, and I have a general kind of a plot. Like my ex-president's thing was maybe just a page outline, and I just let the players role play and see where it went from there.
Great.
So Savage Worlds, as long as you maybe want to put the effort into it, you could do any setting you could imagine with it because it's that flexible.
Now, getting back specifically to Deadlands Reloaded, what kind of character types can you play in this game? I can sort of think of what some of the archetypes for Wild West would be, but what kind of things can you play?
Okay, to get back to Deadlands, now that you know a little bit about Savage Worlds, I don't mean to go on for so long about that, but it's a little integral to knowing the setting.
Yeah,
different character types you might encounter in Deadlands would be, you can play just kind of your straight... you know, I'm your sharpshooter, I'm kind of your quintessential cowboy, you know. You can definitely do that. There are different kind of arcane characters. One of the more unique ones are what are called hucksters. And hucksters use, the premise is that Hoyle's Book of Cards, if you read it right and decipher it in a certain way, that it actually contains these occult secrets.
Oh, wow.
and you can learn to use magic, and these hucksters have... And they basically cast spells via a deck of cards.
Wow.
And they can choose to just cast a spell kind of as is and spend what are called power points to, you know, basically like magic points, you know, to cast them, or they can deal with the devil, as it were.
How does that work?
Where in the game setting, you really wouldn't notice anything with the character, but in the character's mind, they're playing this kind of just pickup game of Texas Hold'em, essentially, with the GM or the devil or whatever supernatural power.
So the GM is the devil in this game, I see.
Yeah, I would say so. And then depending on how well that goes, you can spend it for free. You can make it more powerful than it normally was, or the spell might not go off at all and you lose your points.
Oh, wow, okay.
So it's always up in the air when you're doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's
But it makes a... it's almost kind of like Gambit from the X-Men. You know, you're just, you see a huckster taking out a deck of cards, you know something's about to go down because they literally toss cards as part of their powers. And so, you have other arcane backgrounds like miracles. And the rules for miracles are very cut and dry. You may have like the drinking padre, which we'll mention here soon. He may say, you know, I'm going to make a prayer to have his gun jam. And based on how he's been role-playing his character and how outrageous his request and how often he makes such an outrageous request, I can give that to him or maybe give him a variant on that. So not to say the GM's now God, but...
It's very complicated.
I know.
Very conflicted.
Yeah, but that is really built into the role-playing to where if they're playing it right, there's even a sinning table. not a sinning table, but a sinning. You know, based on how close they are with their path. There's also tribal magic if you're playing like an Indian character. Or things like that. So,
and speaking of cards, mention a little bit about the initiative system.
Oh, sure. The initiative system, instead of just rolling a die to see when you go in combat, you're actually dealt a card from ace to deuce, ace being the highest, deuce being the lowest. And then suit order will come into play there. But it's neat because every round you get dealt a new card. And sometimes you can get dealt a joker. And a joker lets you jump in whenever you want, and you get a bonus to all of your rolls.
And then you said that after the Joker is dealt,
mm-hmm.
then you reshuffle all the cards.
Right. Because normally you just keep dealing off the deck until a Joker appears.
I thought that was a lot of fun, just, you know, rather than saying roll for initiative.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
getting that dealt out. Like you're playing a hand of poker or something.
Yeah, and I own a replica set of Old West playing cards. So that kind of, I thought that kind of helped with the feel. You know, you kind of have this old looking card in your hand, and you're like.
Except that in our playtest game, we none of us, you know, the cards have the
symbols.
They don't
have
the numbers, so we're trying to count. We're like a bunch of third graders counting. is that nine diamonds?
Yeah. But I mean, with the use of playing cards, with the use of chips, things like that, there's always a tactile feel, and I think that actually helps with the players. It sounds really elementary, but I know as a player, just kind of having a card to hold on to, or just, you know. Playing around with poker chips, you know, you feel a little more connected to the adventure. It's hard to explain.
Well, and when you think of Wild West, I think one of the images you get in your head is, you know, cowboys sitting around a table in a saloon playing cards. Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense.
And pretty much any character type you could come up with in this kind of weird West setting, as they call it. You come up with, there's mad scientists, and there's all sorts of these kind of weird takes on... The standard Western genre is like, you could be a famous gunslinger, but you could be one that's come back from the dead.
Oh, wow.
You know, you can go with these crazy ideas where it's a Western, but it's kind of turned on its ear a little bit. So it's a definitely a darker, and everything's not as predictable as it might be in a normal Western.
Well, all right. Well, so what we're going to do right now is take a pause, and we're going to go to our playtest session when we played a game with Cody as the GM, and we had...
The Marshal.
The Marshal, that's right. The GM is called the Marshal, and four player characters. And so we got out the recorder and got some commentary there. So let's go to, because we'll call it the dinner table, and we'll get some commentary about Deadlands Reloaded.
Thank you.
right, well, we just got finished playing through our 2-hour playtest game of Deadlands Reloaded, and we used what's called a one-sheet adventure called Lynched, and we won't go into too many specific details on that adventure in case you want to run that in your own game.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
We will link to that in the show notes, but we've got a full table here, a relatively full table. So on my left, we have Master Marshall / GM Cody.
How y'all doing?
Then we have...
Single L.
Single L is refining his entry music every single episode.
That's a long one.
It's getting better and better. So, next time we have... go ahead and introduce yourself, sir.
I don't know what to do after that. I'm Nathan.
All right, this is Nathan.
I'm in between.
The drinking padre.
The drinking padre. And then next to him we have...
Matt Swetnam.
Okay, so we had a group of... four-player characters and our Marshall. And so after playing through this adventure, just wanted to just ask you guys what you thought of the game. And we have a real diverse set of experiences around the table here. We have folks that have played role-playing games for a long time, some who have had maybe some bad role-playing game experiences. And then we have one guy who is just completely new to role-playing games, has never played before. It's his first game. So based upon all that, what did you guys think of this game?
Let's start with
Single.
Oh man, I was trying to divvy it off. Compared to my first time, well, that sounds bad saying compared to my first time.
Wow.
Compared to my first time, Cody. No, no. First time is always bad. It's never a good thing.
Single L had
this thing had a drastic turn for the worse. No, this was. I really enjoyed it. Let's just start off of there. I really enjoyed it. It's a deny. No, I really enjoyed it. It was really.
So it was a lot better than your first experience.
It was a lot better. Okay. It was a lot better. It was far away from the first experience.
Yeah.
It was almost like a new experience. It was so different.
Now, what was it that was negative about your first? Not to harp on that, but what was negative about your first experience?
You know,
what's better this time?
Might have just been the fact that it was my first RPG, and I didn't know how to go into the situation. Where I think I tried to play the first one almost as a game.
Mm-hmm. Like a board game.
Like a board game, where I was trying to find a strategy to beat the game or whatever. So instead of
A lot of experienced role players that still do that. You have a lot of D&D players that play to win the game.
And that's one nice thing about, I think...
They're called munchkins.
Yeah, it's true. It's one thing that's nice about this system, about the Savage World system in general, is that it is very role-playing focused. It's not really so much about gaining levels. There really aren't any levels in the game. And, you know, building your character. It's about telling a good story.
Yeah, because the first time I wasn't really sure if the people I was playing the game with either were role-playing or they really were annoyed with what I was saying, or because I was just trying to act the role of what I was.
Sure.
And so
you were pretty annoying this time too. But it was very much your character.
I just naturally fit into that role. And so I just felt more comfortable this time as well.
Well, good. That's a good thing. So that's a positive there. And Nathan, you're someone who's never really played a role-playing game before, and what were your impressions of this style of gaming? And it was very new to you.
No, it was great. I mean, I think one of the most important pieces is Cody was a great GM. So Cody was walking us through the story, and when it got a little slow on our end, Cody would throw something in. Hey, would you somebody roll a notice dice? Because
there's a scream outside.
Yeah, exactly. I think... the story's great. All the intricacies involved in it are great. The one thing that just from the first time playing that would help is to know what's a normal time frame look like. You know, so for me coming in, I kind of threw in the whole, okay, what do we got to do to win? You know, I played the munchkins kind of thing. What do we got to do to win? How fast is it going to be? And, you know, as an hour goes on, you're like, okay, are we like on track or are we not even close or whatever? So, yeah, just from the first time playing, that was great.
Yeah, great.
Fun.
And Matt has a lot of experience with role-playing games of various types over the years, but this is his first time playing Savage World system, right?
That's right.
Okay, so what were your impressions of the game?
You know, I really enjoyed it. I was especially intrigued by the mechanic of having the highest die explode.
Yeah.
Not literally.
No. Basically,
it was really the device Cody made. Dice would
No dice were actually damaged in the making.
Yeah. Basically, if you roll say a six on a d6 six sided die, then you got to re-roll it, and you could keep going like
that.
That it just added an interesting twist. And at first I thought, oh gosh, that'll end up with a bunch of huge rolls. But thankfully, my horrible dice rolling luck kind of evened that out, I think.
In all the games I've seen, it's equivalent to like the critical hit in D&D. I think it's that amount of frequency. You'd roll a crit in D&D about as often as you get a crazy roll, like a 25 or a 30, and Savage Worlds, one that keeps going. I happen to have a wild die that I use in all of the con games and things that I run that naturally tends to explode anyway. So that doesn't help.
But it's not exactly a custom, you know, Lou Zochi, perfectly shaped game science
foam.
Die.
It's a big foam D6.
Big foam D6.
It's always been very friendly to the players and not very friendly to me.
Right.
But that was something I worried about too when I was looking at the game. Is I'm like, oh, this exploding dice, it's going to get stupid after a while.
It didn't really have a negative impact at all. It actually made it a lot more fun. Exciting. You didn't know if you were going to just barely make it or really, really do well.
You know, that actually reminds me. I got to bring things back to board games.
Of course. For me. We can't have an RPG podcast.
Of course not. I wouldn't allow that. But there's a game called Pizza Box Football that Cody and I really enjoy. It's a football simulation that uses die rolling and sort of the exploding die concept from Savage Worlds. It reminded me of when you're rolling
kickoff returns,
either kickoff returns or any kind of a run,
right,
where you get a bonus die, and if you roll a six, you can continue to roll. And if you get more sixes, it sort of represents the guy running down the field.
Good, go!
He dodges out of the way and everything.
Perhaps a Joseph Adai run for the end zone. Maybe you're running out the Colts.
But that's how I felt about that exploding die or the ace feature as well. So
yeah, so I really enjoyed it. Obviously. Yeah, Cody did a wonderful job of GMing, and that makes a big difference.
Boy, they're really kissing your butt tonight, aren't they?
Really, yeah. It's like I'm one of those self-deprecating GMs. After every single game I've run without fail, I'm always like, that didn't go well. I'm like, that could have been better. But I mean, as long as everyone had a good time.
It's hard to deal with perfection like that. The best often do that to themselves.
Game on with Cody and Lloyd. Great show. So, a question I had was, you talked about just kind of the general role-playing experience. What did you think of this setting, and what other settings do you think would pique your interest? Single L.
Sorry, that was a...
That's not good for the sound. that was
an Aaron die roll there.
That was an exploding die there.
I enjoyed the Old West feel to it. Maybe more so than... That was another thing with... that was Hex, that Hollow Earth Expedition. Is that the
more
one?
Or less.
It more or less is, yeah.
Because in Hollow Earth Expedition, I kind of had a hard time feeling what time period. I guess it was the Indiana Jones type, kind of thing, 30s going on. Yeah. But I enjoyed sort of the era of this one being sort of the Old West. Anything involving sort of a magic type thing.
Oh my gosh. They didn't get a hold of your life.
any place that there's goblins or anything like that that can have haste and vigilance, that's always a great thing.
Wow.
Or quickly vigilance.
Quickly moving on to Nathan.
I think the setting was great. I think the one thing, I've always got to remember coming into this is, anything goes. And that's the cool thing is you've got some semblance of reality woven in with just anything goes. So and it just makes it exciting and fun. I mean, at each turn, who knows what's going to happen. So,
right.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that this one felt more like a mystery. I don't know if that,
you're trying to solve something.
You're trying to solve something. This one felt more like we're trying to get to the bottom of something the whole time. Right. I felt like there was a goal we're trying to figure out. That was another thing my first time. I just felt I was just wandering and not really knowing what to do.
Well, that's kind of the benefit of a one-shot game like this is that, you do get a chance to find out what's going on relatively quickly, as opposed to when you're doing a huge campaign over several sessions,
And as a GM, you try to lean more towards gentle nudges to the plot and things that the characters would find naturally instead of saying, here's the plot, go over here. It's like you don't try to railroad them into the story, but rather wrap the story around them and make sure they get involved kind of in their own way. I was going to go over to Matt, and you've played and ran quite a bit of different things, including Kobolds Ate My Baby, All Hail King Tor.
All Hail King Tor!
Indeed. How did this one stack up to other games you played?
Setting-wise. I've never played a game set in the Old West. But I have had a background in fantasy stories, fantasy role-playing games. So there was a familiarity, at least on that level. I like having it in the Old West. I think that kind of having the frontier town adds a nice isolationist aspect to it. At least with this story, that worked really well for me.
When you say the Old West, though, I mean it's a tangible reality you can recall. By the way, I mean we probably all saw the street pretty close to the way. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the unicorn or the
flying dragon, but something a little more solid.
Totally, this was like you knew what this looked like. So, yeah, and with Cody's ambience there in the background.
I have an app on my iPhone that does random sounds, and I found one that was ominous graveyard. I'm like, oh, that'll work for a spooky.
And he didn't tell any of us, so we just hear these weird moans and weird rattlings through the trees, and we had no idea what was going on for half the game.
I was having this conversation in character with Cody here, and he's staring at me, and then I hear this moaning and these crickets and this kind of wind sound, and I think the window behind him might be open. And so I hear the moaning, and I'm looking at him, expecting him to react to this moaning, and he's just staring at me.
And even better,
didn't you hear that?
You somehow managed to dial directly to the Lord and get some lightning.
it was stormy weather here in Indianapolis tonight, so that added to the ambiance as well. So.
And one nice thing about the setting is, while it at its core is a Western, you can even throw some horror elements in there and some little bits of supernatural thing. I mean, at its core, yeah, it's a Western, but it's the weird West. You know, it's got...
You can't beat a Western with zombies.
Exactly. You know, zombies added to anything is great, but if you wanted to add that kind of scary touch, you know, you could run kind of a darker game if you wanted to do that, or even if you wanted to just do a straight Western, this game allows it, so... I enjoy running the setting. It's fun.
Cool. Question for you: Have you run something using the Savage World systems other than Deadlands?
Yeah, I ran a bit of a pulp campaign doing it, and then the ex-presidents game I ran at HoosierCon was
Savage
World.
Yeah, that one I know.
Yep, this is the first Deadlands game I've run before. So,
well done.
Woo! And yeah, for those three, I've played in actually all three of those games that he's run, and it's a great system, Savage Worlds, just in general. Because actually the pulp campaign, we actually started off with a different system, and then the last couple of sessions we switched over to Savage Worlds, and it was almost seamless, just being able to switch to that system. It's so easy to teach, and I know there's a lot of other podcasts that really sing the praises of Savage Worlds, and I think we're probably one of them as well. So.
I think it's maybe it and one or two other systems, but I'm ready to kind of use Savage Worlds for anything I want to do it, because there's settings released from anything from fantasy to sci-fi to pirates to anything you'd want to do. So,
cool.
I'm ready to adopt it.
Well, I think the overall opinion seems to be very positive for Deadlands Reloaded, and so now we really appreciate you guys coming over and playing.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll kick it back to the Game On Studios for our final buy, try, or deny for this one.
Let's do it.
So that's a look at how our friends viewed the game Deadlands Reloaded. We had a mix of seasoned gamers and brand new gamers. And
everyone did a great job.
Yeah, it was a really fun game.
It was fun.
And I think that everybody would give this a definite positive based upon the comments there. So let's just go ahead and get into that here. Deadlands Reloaded, Cody, buy, try, or deny?
I'll give it a buy. I'll give the Savage World system a buy. I'll give Deadlands actually a try because... it may not be the setting for you. I mean, not a lot of people like Westerns. And if you fundamentally don't like, if you would not want to play in a Western, then I don't think Deadlands is really going to sway you enough one way. But the Savage World system is great. I mean, it for role-playing purposes, if you only play one, I would go out on a limb and say that is the one you should play. It's flexible enough to fit whatever your group would need. You don't get bogged down in a genre. It's like for D&D, if you take D&D out of the fantasy realm, well, you're screwed, you know? You can't really do that. But with Savage Worlds, you can go from fantasy to sci-fi to superheroes to anything and be fine. So it's good for, it's a good introductory role-playing game. It's not rules heavy, but it's got enough of minutia in it and crunch to where even grizzled veteran gamers will be satisfied. So for Savage Worlds, I give it a buy. For Deadlands, I would give it a try. Try Plus. It's one of the better settings out there for Savage Worlds, and I think if you have even a passing interest in playing a Western game, you should give that one a try. So I will give it to you there. What was the name of your character? Gabriella?
Gabe? Yeah, we changed it to Gabriel, I think, because I just didn't want to play a girl particular game.
Yeah, not this game, right? So for Deadlands, Reloaded, and Savage Worlds, buy, try, or deny.
Well, I definitely have to echo what Cody said about Savage Worlds. It is the most fun role-playing system that I've played. My experience is limited compared to definitely Cody and to even a lot of other seasoned role players. But of all the ones that I've played, Savage Worlds is definitely the most fun if you're someone who likes role-playing heavy role-playing games. If you're looking for something that's just a lot of stats and a lot of tactical, don't go with this role-playing game.
Yeah. But I will interject that it has a nice suite of tactical rules that if you choose to go that route, you can do it. But
okay.
It plays just the same. I'll just throw that out there.
Sure.
There are tactics in it.
But I think it's great, and it's one of the few role-playing games that I did rush out and buy. One of the main reasons is because the Explorer's Edition, the main set of rules for Savage Worlds, cost $10 retail. And so
that's all you need to play it. There's no Game Master Guide or anything.
Yep. Now, the Deadlands Reloaded book is going to be more than that. It's a real thick book.
Kind of like $40 now.
Yep, kind of like a D&D player's handbook, right? That kind of a thickness. But I would give Deadlands Reloaded a buy as well, simply because I think it's a really beautiful book. And I think it's very well put together, and the rule system is real nice, and it's a lot of fun. I think it's something that you should try to the point of buying. If you're going to buy Savage Worlds, I think you should also buy Deadlands Reloaded to add to your collection as well.
I could see that. I guess when I say a try, I mean if you're against Westerns, like I mentioned, Deadlands won't sway you. But even if you have just, boy, that might be fun, you'll be swayed instantly once you get it.
Yep, and I think it'd be real easy to bring, if you have role-playing friends, that'd be easy to bring them into this kind of a system.
So I'm willing to say buys around the whole table.
I think so,
For both the games.
Yep, definitely. So this is a very positive experience, and hope you enjoyed this review of a role-playing game. We definitely want to cast a broad net when it comes to different kinds of games. We focused on board games. We want to get into RPGs. We may even cover some collectible card games or something like that. Who knows?
Easy there.
That's our buy, try, deny for this episode. I think it's about time to close the show out.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, we'd like to invite you to visit our website at www.gameonpodcast.com, where we have all of our previous episodes. We invite you to download those as well as this one. And
our shiny donation button.
You'll notice on the right side of the screen, the shiny donation button hasn't been clicked very often.
No, 100% of the proceeds do go back to the show and indirectly to you, the listener.
That's right, to bring you more great content from the Uncommon Podcast from the Common Gamer. Please send us an email at thegameoninbox@gmail.com. Right.
You set me up. I spiked it.
That's good. Good. GameOnInbox@gmail.com. If you have any questions, commentary, or anything that you want to tell us, we would love to hear from you. So join us in 2 weeks for episode 17 of Game On, where we will be bringing you some footage from True Realm.
We may not survive the dungeon,
but we're going to sure try, and we may be interviewing some DMs.
Oh, I'm definitely interviewing a room DM. So you just killed us. Your thoughts.
So if you're interested in that, or even if you're not, definitely tune in 2 weeks for another episode. And until then,
Memphis Tigers on!
That's Game On.
No.
Oh, good. You know, you and me are through professionally.